Good afternoon, everyone. It's Dr. Nigro again, our next episode of Psychology Unplugged. As always, a heartfelt thank you to all of our followers, both here in the United States and internationally. It's the highlight of my week to be able to do this, and I appreciate all of your comments and feedback. This has taken off to a level that I never thought it would ever get to and reach an audience that I never had imagined. My whole goal was to legitimize and demystify mental health and, most importantly, instill a sense of hope. So last night we were able to, someone had, contacted me or emailed or, and needed help on a paper about bipolarity and bipolar disorder. And Julie and I spent like 40 minutes of our Sunday evening doing what we love best, is collaborating with people and answering questions and being a resource. And it's really a pleasure. And again, a heartfelt thank you. So today I'm going to go back into, I did IQ last week. This time I'm going to revisit a topic that I did have done in the past, and I'm sure I will revisit again, is narcissistic personality disorder and some variations that you're not going to find anywhere in the DSM-5. So personality is, you know, I've done a lot of episodes on this, and this is probably, this topic of personality disorders in and of themselves is certainly an interest for me, as I you guys who follow us, as you know, I don't do a lot of therapy, but I primarily treat borderline from a very cognitive, behavioral, rationally motive perspective. But personality disorders, in my personal and professional opinion, I think are often missed by mental health professionals. They are underdiagnosed, despite somebody meeting diagnostic criteria, because people, for some reason, believe that you shouldn't diagnose somebody because they're not 18, and that is absolutely ridiculous, because nowhere in the DSM, with the exception of antisocial for a legal reason, does it say that you cannot diagnose prior to, if somebody meets the diagnostic criteria. So it is definitely a frustration for me. And a lot of people, depending on their education, don't always get a lot of training in diagnostics and personality disorders and really understanding personality and how it's constructed. You know, the work of Theodore Milan, really the work of Alfred Adler, probably the pioneer and really parsing out, you know, what really is, you know, constitutes personality. And just as a recap, it's our belief about ourselves, a belief about other people, a belief about the world in general, and the therefores and conclusions that we draw. So narcissism, is it a bad thing? I think that's a tricky question. I think narcissism is definitely very different than narcissistic personality disorder. Narcissism, if we just take the kind of the textbook example, you know, use Donald Trump. There's a classic example of what we would call an overt narcissist. And an overt narcissist is pretty much textbook in what's in the DSM. The grandiosity, fantasies of success and power, brilliance, artistic creativity. They believe that they're special, that they possess, not from a psychotic sense, but just special and unique, and only can be associated with people who are on their same level, even though they still believe if they're on their, someone else is on their same level, that the people below them really are people on that same level they perceive. They really believe that they're, you know, below them. They, you know, they require excessive admiration and the sense of entitlement. Unreasonable expectations and almost, you know, automatic compliance with someone's, with their expectations or wishes, spoken or non-spoken, and talk about, you know, I think people are mind readers. You know, they're interpersonally exploitative. They will take advantage of others to achieve their own goals. They will take advantage of others to destroy them. And I'm going to get to that in a minute. They lack empathy, and they're envious. And they believe that others are envious of them, and they're arrogant in their behaviors and their attitudes. And a lot of times it's very easy to spot what we would call an overt narcissist, because these behaviors are so over the top, the grandiosity and the entitlement and the wrath that comes with narcissistic injury, and the narcissistic injury is revenge. So that kind of segues into, we don't have a, this is not a formal clinical diagnosis, but there's a different group of narcissists that are called, they fall under what we would call covert narcissists. Now, these individuals, they slide under the radar all the time. They're meeting the diagnostic criteria for all of these, but because they're covert, they lay very low, and they're not as easy to recognize or to spot. And I'm going to use some non-clinical terms throughout this episode. So again, the insult to any type of narcissist is revenge. And not just revenge of an eye for an eye, but revenge for an eye for your life. And the narcissistic injury can be incredibly dangerous. It can be extremely destructive, whether that's through ruining someone financially, ruining someone through their career, ruining someone... rooting somebody through social media, and it can be relentless, because the covert narcissist, because they believe that they are entitled to that, and how they put on a great facade, and they're able to fake a lot of people because they're able to hide it. And I think why the coverts are harder is I think they're more calculating. The overt narcissist, they talk a big game, and they blow their whistle, and they're very loud, but their attention, I think, gets distracted pretty easily to the next person that they perceive to insult, committed some insult. Where the covert narcissist is more likely to engage other people, what, you know, a non-clinical terminology is flying monkeys, and that's taken from, you know, the Wizard of Oz, where they will send other people to kind of look at your social media accounts, or maybe, you know, meet you for a drink to kind of find out, because their goal is they want to see, if you hurt them, they want to see you not just fall, they want to see you fail, and they want to see you be completely obliterated. And the best thing you could do in dealing with narcissists, and this is the old saying, the best revenge is living well. And that will drive a narcissist crazy. They are unable to even sleep. They could be pacing the room. Their mind is racing. But they're also cowards. Remember I talked about the personality? Narcissists are huge cowards. It's the Wizard of Oz. This is Oz, this mighty, powerful creature. Maybe that'll be more the overt one. But this is the same premise of the covert one, is they present this facade, whether it's very overt and boisterous or very subtle. Behind that curtain, they are terrified. They are terrified that Toto will pull that back and realize that there is nothing there. These are vapid individuals who live on a sense of entitlement and superiority and have no regard for individuals. This is why you do not see these people come into treatment. Now, I have diagnosed this in people, but these people aren't coming into treatment. And when they do come into treatment, there's usually a reason, because someone's telling them to, or their job is at stake, or their marriage or their relationship is at stake. But these are really easy to spot. We have tests that are really good. The Rorschach is great at being able to pick up narcissism. So is the MMPI and other assessments. And just, you know, listening to how someone talks and refers to themselves and the stories that they tell. But narcissists are incredibly vulnerable in their self-esteem. And again, like I said, they're hypersensitive to injury from any kind of criticism or perceived defeat. They can't let things go. And again, not to, you know, it's not a political argument, but you see like Donald Trump with the election, he cannot let this go years later. This is how the person perseverates and amping it up to say, we're going to be, you know, I'm going to be a dictator for a day. This is the trajectory that somebody will go when the fragility of a self-esteem that is so fragmented, this is why this is a dangerous personality disorder. This is one, and especially when you get involved with the covert ones, they're very happy as long as you do what you're told. And if you exploit them, not only shame on you, but I'm coming after you. And I think you get to a point where can make an individual question their own sanity. Question, you know, this is, you know, the term gaslighting. A lot of this comes into play with, you know, you are the root of the problem. You did this, and they're able to distort reality because, you know, if you have this sense of entitlement and you believe that you're special, you're spinning stories. And these individuals are very calculating, and they tend to project a lot onto other people. So these are, if you go back to the episode I did on defense mechanisms. So they react to disdain, rage, just some like defiant counterattacks. And sometimes the humility, if they are exposed to a larger population, the humility is way too much for them to handle, that they have the potential to eventually retreat. But if person X has outed the narcissist or said they did something, whether it was a mistake or they lied in a business deal or that something was exposed about the person, the covert one doesn't generally jump onto a verbal tirade in towards the individual. They're going to want to kind of poke the bear a little bit and kind of see, like, you know, put some feelers out where they're at. But their whole goal now is, you injured me and I'm going to destroy you. And that's, you know, and they will start to go out through the periphery. They'll start to go out through people who are on, you know, fringe friends, and gradually work back, almost like a, I guess be similar like peeling an onion, you know, where you're at the core, and they're trying to dismantle all of the social structures, all of the social connections, until they get to a point where they believe that they have won and they have been vindicated, and the relentless nature of the covert narcissists can be, again, incredibly scary. It could certainly push somebody who may be already psychologically fragile into a depressive state, exacerbate anxiety, create paranoia. You know, from the perspective of the covert narcissist, and it doesn't, you know, mean these are bad people. It's just when that self-esteem is so fractured and almost non-existent, that their self-esteem is determined by the fans that show up, the car that they drive, the job that they have, this very boastful, audacious presentation to the world that they are better than you. And sometimes they can have a magnetic personality. You know, these individuals can be very charming. They can be incredibly charming and incredibly engaging and fun to be around, the life of the party. And you know, some do have access to different means, and some people can benefit from it. You know, hey, you got the nice house, you go for the pool party, and this is great. But again, once you cross that line, and if you expose, and if you, more, it's more about if you expose them. I guess it would happen probably in a direct one-on-one confrontation, but it's much more problematic if you've exposed them to the their colleagues or the social circle or to anybody that's in the periphery, where now the spotlight is on them and they are hell-bent on taking that spotlight and not only moving it, but smashing it into the ground and smashing it into your face. This is the vengeance of dealing with narcissistic rage. because, again, the relentless nature of this, and it's, you know, it's in the cluster B personality category, which is where the histrionic, the borderline, and the antisocial are. So it's you know, match made heaven is you put a dependent and a narcissist together, you know, that's going to work out just fine. But, you know, once you cross the narcissist, there's really no going back. And, you know, they could beat you down only if you let them. And, you know, if anybody is in this type of predicament or, you know, maybe in an abusive relationship, you know, falling down is inevitable. Staying down is a choice. And that's a really important, I don't want to say metaphor, but really important message. And I'll say it again, like falling down is an accident. Staying down is a choice. And, you know, again, like I said, it shouldn't be a battle, but the best way to defend yourself against a narcissist is to just avoid them and show no sign of weakness of that any of their tactics, and they will eventually amp that up. And until a point where eventually becomes, you hope for, you know, the behavior just moves to extinction. It's definitely much more common in men than women. And I think a lot of times it has to do with like sports and you know, early parental images or early parental messages of you're amazing, you can do no wrong, you're special. I think sometimes it can border on, you know, delusional thinking, but, you know, for the vast majority, I don't have a clear explanation why it's more common in men, but it does tend to be, and that could be just the structure of which Western society, you know, that we have not got to a level of parity or equality where I think, you know, men and women should be, you know, paid the same and have the same opportunities for jobs. And, you know, I think we say that, but I don't think we do enough to really get to that level. So, you know, most men in the United States are in upper level management positions and upper level, you know, so they have access to more money, some more stuff like that. So developing, you know, healthy narcissism is not necessarily a bad thing. And I think you can equate that with self-confidence, but, you know, humility is the antithesis of narcissism. Is the complete opposite. Lacking empathy is definitely, because if they're on a path of trying to destroy you in passive ways, and there's a lack of empathy, that would give cause for concern. It's very similar, you know, to the antisocial. They lack empathy, and that's why they have no regard for the violation of societal norms. And, you know, I talked about that in the episode on sociopathy and antisocial personality disorder. But narcissism, especially the covert type, because they just said the term flying monkeys, they enlist other people within their social group. They want to gather information about you, and they want to be able to infiltrate as many aspects of your life to try to make you crumble, to try to make you fall. And they often create, they will develop and perpetuate a smear campaign. Again, that can be very passive, because again, there's this word, the fragility. It's like, hey, you know, with the covert, you know, you talk a big game, you know, once you confront me, they're not going to confront you because they're scared to death that if they confront you, that you're going to call them out. You're going to pull that curtain. That's why dealing with narcissists is very tricky. And again, you don't see them often in treatment, but, you know, these are individuals that unless they really hit rock bottom, don't tend to get better until they hit rock bottom, or, you know, for some miraculous, there's some miraculous aha moment. I have not. I think very much the exception. Certainly not something that I have seen, but, you know, in talking with individuals, you know, the covert narcissist, we don't, if you just read the DSM, it looks like that classic, just, you know, this cocky, you know, person who just cares about themselves and disregards the feelings and welfare of other beings, other people. When you get into the covert narcissism, they're good. They're good chameleons. They're good at hiding this stuff, and they want something, and they have an agenda. and they will pursue things, and they're that sense of entitlement, and they will work their way into people's lives to get what they want because they believe they deserve it. Then I mean, this is true. This is their belief system. I deserve this. Not that I want this. Yeah, they may want it, but they believe they deserve this. And not only do they believe they deserve it, they believe they're entitled to it. So if you believe that, if they believe they're entitled and deserve it, and you don't give it to them, shame on you. And how dare you confront me? And again, that's where the confrontation is, when it's exposed, not the one-on-one, say maybe a conversation across a dinner table or an island, but say a wife says something to her friend group, and the friend group now brings it to the country club, and now the narcissist, the covert that everybody loves, and he's gregarious, and he's great, and he's amazing, now he's exposed as being unfaithful or, lying in business. And once that gets out, that's when the covert narcissist is going to smile. They could likely retreat because the humility is too much for them. But then comes the revenge. Did you want to?
No, I didn't want to spend a heck of a lot of time on this. I know that in my practice, narcissists tend to be very fragile in a very unique way. People can present as very charming. When you're in practice for, a fair amount of time, you start to get that the antenna goes up. You get the vibe. And if you don't do what they want you to do, I've had examples of this in my practice, not currently, but in my full-time previous jobs working with people. I've had to deal with narcissistic rage. It would make you feel unsafe. And it's scary because they can come off as quite tyrannical. They're easy to upset. I say them like they. I feel like narcissism is on a continuum. And if you look at anything on social media that has anything to do with what people look like and how they present to themselves, like, I don't want to tear down the Kardashians. I really don't. But it's image. So it's about that hollow Easter bunny. It's the image. It's all about the image. And if that image is shattered, then, and I'm not suggesting that any of the Kardashians are narcissists. I'm just saying what they project to the world is just an example of, like, when I grew up with magazines, and I grew up with, like, Brooke Shields and, Christie Brinkley and the swimsuit, they were at newsstands. They weren't in my face. They weren't on television. So, only in movies. So I was lucky enough not to be surrounded with that, by that. The other thing I wanted to say is that, yeah, they are very fragile, but narcissists come off as very charming, but you'll know very quickly because they always want something from you. They're not there to give you anything except take. And that is, I'm talking about full-blown narcissism. I'm not talking about narcissistic tendencies, because I think on a continuum, we all have narcissistic tendencies. I mean, you can't go through life not wanting something from somebody. Does that mean it's narcissism? No, not necessarily. But if you're looking at, like, the DSM-5 and, the diagnostic criteria to formally diagnose someone with narcissistic personality, you can pretty much sniff those out in real time. They, I think women have come a long way. I also think that, there are narcissists that do, if you're going to bully someone online and you're hiding behind the curtain, you're a coward, and that would be a perfect example of a covert narcissist, I would imagine. And there's a lot of cyberbullying. Everyone's seen it. So if you're in a relationship with someone like that, try to get some help. Talk to your primary care. If you don't have a therapist, try to get into treatment. The only thing you can change is you. You're never going to change that person. They typically do not, like Cor said before, they do not engage in treatment. They can't tolerate it. I know there's one other thing I wanted to say, but I say it like a they, but they are very unique. And like I said, fragile. And there is narcissistic rage and revenge. So, I don't want to get into politics. I mean, Cor made a statement earlier, and, you know, I guess I would agree. It's kind of like you're banging your head against the wall, and you're like, am I crazy? Like, it, and they prey on dependent personality. So that is something that is kind of like a two wrongs make a wrong.
Well, I think they prey not necessarily on dependent personality, but prey on
people who are vulnerable.
Vulnerability, people they can exploit, and people that can give them something.
Right. They're takers. So they're givers and takers. And they're 100%, I would believe, a full-blown narcissist is a taker. There's one thing I do want to say. I know Cora will get back to it, but before I'm asking you guys a huge favor to, if you can, if you're on Instagram, please follow us. We have a lame page. I know it. It's the only way that I can get information out to you guys about what I'm caring about, what I'm concerned about for humanity. And I am posting stories because I'm so bad at Instagram. But if I post these stories and you see them and then you follow me, I get stronger out there to vie for innocent animals. And I'm not going to go say much more than that. But on Instagram, Return to Freedom, in their bio, I have it on my story. I very often will post them. And linked in their bio, if you go to, they ask you to sign a petition. I'm not forcing you to sign a petition. But if you look at the material and you feel like comfortable with that, it literally directs you, if you scroll down to what I can do, what can I do? How do I make a stand? And then you click on that, and then it immediately brings you to, you know, where do you live? Enter your zip code, gives you your representatives of Congress, Joe Biden, President Biden, and all these other, you know, heavy hitters and the people who really need to be reached in order for there to be change. And there is some good news coming down the pike, but I think that we have quite a fight ahead of us. But if you could please follow us on Instagram, I would appreciate it. Thank you so much. And thank you for looking at my stories and just spreading education about wild horses and burros. Sorry, just got to get it in there.
And burros.
And burros.
All right. So, yes, narcissism is definitely, it's prevalent. I know from speaking with a lot of you guys, you've questioned whether you might be in a relationship with someone or suspected a parent might be. These are dangerous ones. And like I said, the covert, I just want to really draw attention to that because they blend in. They blend in. And it's scary when somebody operates from a perspective of entitlement, that they're special, that what they want, they deserve. If they don't get it, this isn't they're going to go, you know, pout in the room and throw a hissy fit. This is, I'm going to come after you, and I'm going to make sure the pain you've caused me, real or imagined, is exponentially more than what you caused me. And again, listing other people, again, not a clinical term, but flying monkeys, and listing other friends who may have come out of the woodwork because they want to know what you're up to. They want to know because they want to know that you're failing. They want to know that you're hurting. They want to know that they are cutting off the things that are important to you. And that is why it's important that you safeguard yourself. You safeguard your house. You safeguard your job as much as you can, because the relentless nature of narcissism, when it crosses into psychopathology, that's where it becomes dangerous and concerning. And the covert ones, like I said, what you and I both said, they're charming. People miss them all the time, and they, you know, if you're starting to convince, if you're starting to think of yourself or convince yourself that you are, you know, you see this diametrically opposite mindset in yourself starting to change, definitely please get into therapy. Or if you're in therapy, talk to your own therapist about this, because a lot of people say, maybe it is me. Maybe I am crazy. And the best and really only way to deal with a narcissist is to live well. and to not fall and to not go down a path of destruction. And this is where therapy can be really helpful in pointing out, you know, what's you, what's them, and, you know, where, you know, where do the two intersect. So hopefully this was helpful. I will definitely probably revisit this again at some point. So I appreciate all of your feedback and involvement and engagement. You can reach out to us, reach out to me directly through psychologyunplugged@outlook.com. You can contact me through Psychology Today. You can follow us on Instagram at psychology_unplugged_. You can even contact me directly at 617-750-9411 East Coast Standard Time in the United States. Until next time, take care of yourselves, take care of each other, be well, ask questions, and I will talk to you guys next week. Thanks, guys. Bye.